Even if you bake things like cakes and pies infrequently, you learn quickly that they do tend to include a lot of sugar, but tastes and our knowledge of the human body change. And now there's greater pressure to create sweet treats without quite as much sugar. And that's the main point of a new book by Joanne Chang, the author of Baking with Less Sugar, Recipes for Desserts Using Natural Sweeteners and Little to No White Sugar. Joanne Chang is the co-owner and pastry chef at Flowery Bakery and Cafe, and denoted by a plus sign. The two locations are in the Boston area. Joanne's written two previous books, Flower and Flower 2, T-O-O, and Joanne joined us on The Exchange just before Christmas 2010 to talk about baking for the holidays. So this is a return visit. Joanne, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much for having me back. It's great to hear from you.
Tell us a bit about the growth of Flower and Flower 2. They sound like they've become Boston institutions now.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, hearing you talk a little bit about Flower, I realized it's been a while since we've spoken. Since we've spoken, we've actually opened a couple more locations. So we now have 4 locations in the Boston area.
Excellent. Okay, so really have grown up. But this is a place that grew from, well, it started from you actually working in a different business entirely, didn't it?
I started out as a management consultant. Fresh out of college, I had a degree in applied math and economics. And I worked for 2 years in a business suit, carrying around a computer, traveling the states. And then I realized that I didn't really want to stay in my position as a consultant. And instead, I wanted to be in the kitchen. It's what I did for all of my free time. I was that person who was always inviting you over for dinner and bringing stuff to work and having you try all my experiments. And so I decided after 2 years of consulting to take a leave of absence and get into the culinary field. And once I got my first job, I fell in love with it, and I never went back to that consulting job.
That was the next
I know they're still holding it for me.
I was going to ask. Leave of absence seems to be going on for quite a while now.
Exactly.
You say you live by the words, life is sweet. I mean, given that, how big a challenge to come up with the very concept for this book?
It was actually very challenging for me to take what is my life's work, which is creating sweet desserts, and then try to reduce the sugar in them. But not for the reasons that you might think. It was not that challenging to figure out how to make things taste delicious, but have less sugar in them. I naturally have a very, very big sweet tooth, but it's not geared towards things that are super sweet. So it was actually really fun for me to create pastries that aren't super sickeningly sweet, but instead focus on flavors like chocolate and fruits and maple and honey. So that part was fun. The challenging part was recognizing the how much chemistry goes into baking. And once you reduce the sugar in a cookie or a cake or a pie, it changes the texture, it changes the keeping qualities, it changes the appearance. And so the taste, it was the easy part. It was kind of everything else that ended up being a lot of work.
When you say, Joanne, you don't like the really super sweet treats, I'm just trying to figure out what your zone is here. What's the kind of treat you would eat on a fairly regular basis, and what's the kind that you would find too sweet?
So for me, whenever we go out to eat, we always order dessert, and I always veer towards things like custards. Fruit desserts are the ones that I like the most. I mean, I'm definitely a fruit pie type of person, but I don't want the filling to be really, really sweet. I think when I think really sweet desserts, I think about those really sugary, a lot of sauces, a lot of caramel, a lot of fudge, even a lot of chocolate desserts I find to be overly sweetened. And I love desserts that focus on like the bittersweet flavors of chocolate. I love desserts that are focus on vanilla, but you can really taste the vanilla and you don't taste a lot of sugar. I think there's been a tendency in American desserts to be really, really focused on the sugar. I mean, just look at, you know, a typical birthday cake. If you go into a bakery, there tends to be a lot of frosting, you know, the big colored roses and flowers and all of that. I mean, I grew up every now and then enjoying that, and I did love it, but it's not where my natural sweet barometer is. I like things that are much more focused on the flavor of the actual dessert.
It's interesting how that changes over time, too, because I'm still making apple pies out of the Betty Crocker cookbook from years ago, and I'm cutting the sugar about in half there, and it still turns out a pretty good pie, yeah.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people come up to me and say that. And I think that was one of the reasons why I wanted to write the book. I've had a lot of people say, I love baking from your book. I usually reduce the sugar by a third or by a half. Sometimes it comes out well, sometimes it doesn't. You know, are there any tricks? And it seems like more and more people are recognizing that just because something's super sweet doesn't mean it's going to be super good. And so if you can figure out how to reduce the sugar but still keep the texture and the way it looks and the way it keeps, if you can still keep that level high, then that's the way a lot of people that I know are looking to bake.
Joanne, how did your husband Christopher's experiences help pave the way to thinking about less sugary treats?
Christopher was actually a really big component of this book, indirectly. So we met because I was his pastry chef years and years ago, and he has a huge sweet tooth, and he would eat pastries morning, noon, and night. I mean, his favorite thing is sugar cereals and donuts and candy bars, and he just loves sweets. Unfortunately, you know, he's one of those people that will definitely get on a sugar high and then crash on a sugar low, and I've seen it time and time again. And my life's work is creating desserts, and so what I want to be able to do is bring everything home that I make and have us enjoy it at home. But it's definitely not great for him health-wise. And what I started to do probably about 2 or 3 years ago is I started to try to experiment with some of our recipes and reduce the sugar out of them purely for personal selfish reasons, because I wanted to share the stuff that I make at the bakery with my husband at home. And just through experimenting with different recipes, I was able to take some of his favorite things and reduce the sugar and make things that he still loved. So he was a big reason why I started thinking about writing this book, and he was definitely one of the top testers that I had.
All right, much more to talk about the process and the recipes themselves as we go further into the book, Baking with Less Sugar, Recipes for Desserts Using Natural Sweeteners and Little to No White Sugar. We'll talk more with the author, Joanne Chang, when we come back, and you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as well. Baking with Less Sugar, Joanne Chang and you in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Joanne Chang, the co-owner and pastry chef at Flower Bakery and Cafe with 4 locations in the Boston area. Darn it, a long way to go for us to pick up the treats, but we can certainly get the benefit of her experiences in her new book, Baking with Less Sugar, Recipes for Desserts Using Natural Sweeteners and Little to No White Sugar. You can join Joanne Chang and me as we talk about the contents of the book, 800-838-3760 around the region, 800-838-3760, and our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So we talked about your husband Christopher and watching his reactions to sugar and the up and then the deep down,
right?
But not the only one. Apparently, people have been asking for things a little differently over the years at the bakeries as well.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've been in business long enough now. It's been almost 15 years to see the various trends come and go. So when we first started out, the Atkins diet was really big, and everybody was, you know, reducing carbs. And I even had a couple of investors say, is this such a wise move to open a bakery in the middle of this no-carb kind of environment? So I've seen it go up and down. I do think that recently, in the past 5 or 6 years, I've had a lot of customers ask, you know, do you do anything with no sugar? Do you do anything with less sugar? And I think all of that is a response to just a general state of overconsumption that we as Americans have seen. I will never be one to say eliminate sugar from your diet. I couldn't do it, nor would I want to. And I don't think there's a need to. I know that, you know, this wasn't meant to be a diabetic book or any sort of medical journal, but I do know that there have been a lot of articles out that have talked about our overconsumption. And my experience has been not that we need to eliminate sugar, but that we should just be mindful of it. We should be aware of how much sugar we're consuming. And I think if you're eating a lot of processed foods, you would be surprised at how much both sugar and sodium are in those foods that you just don't think about. So for me, I think just trying to be mindful, eat things in moderation, that's something that's important to me, and I've noticed that our guests have been asking for that too. So it was definitely a response not just to Christopher, but also to our guests, wanting to be able to enjoy all the things that we make, but have it be part of a more mindful, balanced diet.
You apparently didn't know the term glycemic index 10 years ago.
I didn't. I learned a lot writing this book. We had a lot of discussions about whether or not we wanted to position this as a diabetic-type book or as a book for people who, you know, have sugar problems. And again, with Christopher being one of those people. And at the end of the day, like, that's just not my expertise. And what I feel very comfortable and happy doing is creating recipes that work in your home that you can share with your family with different angles. And so this book now is focusing on desserts that have less sugar. And so there's less refined white sugar in the entire book. And then there's entire chapters that don't use any refined white sugar, but instead substitute honey or maple syrup or fruit juices. So that for me is where I feel most comfortable sharing my experience and what I'm passionate about.
Joanne, I'm struck by your statement that the more you know, the more you don't know. And in the context of baking with or without sugar, what do you mean there?
It's so true. You know what? I think I thought that it was going to be mostly a book of figuring out how to trick your palate, that something that doesn't taste that sweet is sweet. And so I was initially starting to dabble around with, I didn't want to do artificial sweeteners at all, but there are a number of natural sweeteners out there that people are starting to use, things like stevia, agave nectar. And I started the book thinking I'm going to focus on these sugars and I'm going to sweeten these desserts using these alternate sugars, and that's going to be my approach. In the end, what we decided to do is to focus on sweeteners that you would have in your cabinet without having to go online and go search for something that's not readily available, which is why we focused on honey, maple syrup, molasses, fruit, chocolate, things that everybody has in their cabinets. But what was interesting was that, like I was saying earlier, it wasn't the flavor that was the hard part. It was the texture. It was learning how to whip up a cake where you normally have some leavening properties that happen with sugar and butter. But if you don't have the sugar, how do you create that airy, foamy, tender quality of a cake? And that's where I thought, man, I've been baking for, 20-some years. I've even taught lectures at Harvard on the science of baking, and I'm learning every day about how if you remove the sugar from this item, it's going to change the way in which it looks when it's done. It's going to change the way in which you store it, because you can't store it as long because it's not going to hold up as long as a normal sugared item is. So everything that we tried, that I tried when I was testing, I thought I knew what was going to happen. And I would say about 50% of the time I was right. So that was good. But then the other 50%, that's when I realized I really don't know what I don't know until I start, thinking and looking outside of the box and to try these different recipes.
That was a real wow moment for me reading into the book, though, was the fact that sugar does a lot more than make stuff sweet. I mean, there's a lot of chemistry involved in there. And you touched on it briefly, but give us a little expansion there, for example, on what it does in concert with butter.
So when you're to make a cake or a cookie, most recipes start off with the instruction to cream butter and sugar together. And what that means is to simply mix butter and sugar with a wooden spoon or in a mixer, and to keep mixing it. And then once you beat it for a long enough time, it turns lighter in color. And that's where it gets the name creaming. So you cream the butter and sugar together until it's light and pale like cream. And what you've done is you've aerated the butter. The sugar, essentially, if you look at it under a microscope, sugar is a crystal, which means it has really sharp edges. And what it does is it goes into the butter, and just like you might do during the spring in your garden with a garden hoe, you are going to take the garden hoe and you're going to fluff up the soil, which has been compacted all winter long. When you're creaming butter and sugar together, the sugar does the exact same thing. It basically fluffs up the butter and creates all of these air pockets. And it's those air pockets that when you combine it with flour and eggs and vanilla and milk or whatever to make a cookie or a cake, it's all of those air pockets that end up expanding when the batter goes into the oven, and that's what causes a cake to become light and fluffy. So if you don't have those air pockets, then what you end up baking off is something that's a lot denser. So without sugar, that became a real challenge. Like, how do you make a light, fluffy cake when you don't have that creaming property? And that's where, you know, a lot of the, you don't know what you don't know until you delve into it. That's what I ended up learning.
Okay. With all the talk about hoes, we're going to have to call you back on Master Gardener Day, too. But as far as the, now, so when we get to the specific reference to white sugar, though, I mean, do the rawer, like blonder forms of sugar do the same sort of thing? Is there something about the bleachedness of the sugar that makes it do what it does?
No, it has nothing to do with that. So raw sugar, turbinado sugar, people, you know, even brown sugar, people think that they might be using something that's a little bit more healthy. It's definitely less refined to use a raw sugar, so that's a good thing. But at the same time, it is still refined sugar. It's still processed sugar. So it will still have the same creaming qualities. But that's not an approach I took in this book. To substitute white sugar with raw sugar doesn't really change what I was looking to do, which is simply reduce the amount of sugar in a pastry.
Joanne Chang is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the co-owner and pastry chef at Flower Bakery and Cafe, 4 locations in the Boston area, a long way from here. But we have the benefit of her book, Baking with Less Sugar, Recipes for Desserts Using Natural Sweeteners and Little to No White Sugar. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 around the listening area. That's 800-838-3760 by email jx@jeffnet.org. Grumpy John in Grants Pass is on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Joanne Chang.
Hi, I'd like to tell you a short story about sugar, but first, Joanne, please don't use your hoe when you're fluffing your garden because it cuts the worms in half. There is a device called a spading fork. That's what
I'm
you
not
want
being
to
invited
use for
back.
Fluffing your garden. Now, my story. I was leaving Berkeley in the morning, going on a destination, didn't have time for breakfast, so down at the end of Ashby Avenue, there was a returned bakery goods place. I thought I'd stop in there, get a muffin or something, and be on my way. As it turns out, I was a little bit early. The returned bakery goods store was closed, but the chain link fence gate was open. I walked around back, and there was a guy standing with a semi-truck back there, and he was taking, you know, these little crescent-shaped pies. He was taking them and holding them for a second. He would toss one into one bin and another into another bin, mm-hmm. you know, around cardboard container. I said, "What you up to?" He said, "These ones that I'm feeling that are cracked go into this box because it goes to hog feed because the shelf life is not necessarily as good. But these go in here and they're sold." I said, "I was trying to buy some. You want to sell me some?" He said, "Help yourself." So I started eating pies. I started with my favorite. Then after a while, after sampling all the different kinds, I was redoing some. I stopped eating the crust, just ate the centers. Here's the salient point. I was on halfway through my favorite flavor, which happened to be blueberry, and I looked at that pie, mm-hmm. and I realized that I wanted that next bite as much as I had wanted the first bite, but if I took that bite, it would just sit there on my tongue because I was completely filled up with sugar.
Wow.
You cannot satisfy a sugar craving. You can
right.
only enjoy it, but it can't get satisfied.
Right.
So that, I hope that teaches people, you don't have to have a huge amount of it. Just a taste will satisfy you as much as you're going to be able to be satisfied.
Right.
Because you will still want more no matter if you're completely, and I mean physically, stuffed with sugar.
All right, Grumpy
right.
John, thanks for the story and for sharing the experience. Wow. So you don't go into the physiology of sugar on the body very much here, do you?
Not really. Again, because I don't have medical training or, you know, any sort of experience in that world, I felt a little bit, you know, like it was not my place. I'm a baker. I want to teach people how to bake well. I wanted, you know, families who are looking to reduce white sugar in their diets. I wanted them to be able to grab this book and bake, and I didn't want to get too much into what he was just saying about how sugar can be addictive. But it is something that I learned, you know, in doing research for the book, and it's something I think that we have all experienced. You know, you start to eat something that's, I think both the body craves sugar, it craves fat, it craves salt, and you start to get on those binges where you're eating something and you don't want it anymore, but you really want it. It's this weird thing. And that's one of the things in writing these recipes that I didn't want to focus on that sugar high. What I wanted to focus on was the flavor of whatever it is that I was creating in terms of that dessert.
So lay out the general run of the book, Joanne. How did you divide the chapters up?
Yeah, so we started, the very first chapter is a chapter that just has reduced white sugar. So they are traditional, typical recipes, a lot of them from my first baking book, Flour. And these recipes have been reworked to contain either half, a third, or even a quarter of the amount of sugar that's in the original recipe. So, for example, there's an oatmeal raisin cookie in the first book that uses 1 cup and 3 quarters of sugar. So that's about 28 tablespoons of sugar. That's a pretty large amount of sugar. In the Baking with Less Sugar, in the new book, the recipe uses 6 tablespoons of sugar. So you're down to less than a quarter of the sugar that's in the original recipe. So that's the first chapter. The second chapter focuses on desserts that are sweetened with just bittersweet chocolate. Bittersweet chocolate has sugar in it. It's made with sugar. But a lot of chocolate recipes will use chocolate, and then they'll use additional sugar to sweeten the dessert. And what I've done is I've just used the sweetness that's in the chocolate and created a whole chapter of chocolate desserts, like a chocolate whoopie pie that doesn't have any additional sugar added to it, but instead it's just made with chocolate.
I love that.
And then
name.
We go into honey. There's a bunch of recipes that use just honey as the sweetener. The fourth chapter is maple syrup and molasses. And then the fifth chapter is fruits and fruit juices. And in this chapter, I use fresh fruits, I use fruit juices, I use dates, and I use a combination of all of these to create different cakes and puddings and tarts and recipes that really celebrate the flavor of fresh fruits without emphasizing the sugar part of these desserts.
Well, my jaw really hit the floor, Joanne, when you got to talking about agave, which is common in our kitchen. What's the dirty little secret of most agave?
You know, agave, like I said, it was something that we started testing. And then I started to read a little bit more about it, and people are on the fence about whether or not it's really a great alternative to white sugar. There are some ways in which agave itself is processed that's supposedly not great for the body, and I didn't want to get into whether it is or isn't. Is it healthy? Is it good? Is it not? It's not something that's super readily available to a lot of people. I think, you know, depending on where you live, you can get it pretty easily in the grocery store or not. You can get anything these days online, so... Mm-hmm. You know, you can get it, but it's not something that most people have in their cabinets. So we decided just to veer away from it. I've done a couple of agave recipes, and they're pretty easy. It's a pretty easy switch. Once you've tested recipes with honey and maple, you can definitely sub out the maple syrup or the honey and use agave. But just in general for this book, we decided not to focus on that.
Okay. I'm never surprised when we talk about baking and we get a number of phone calls. We have a few lined up for you. Here's Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Joanne Chang, the author of Baking with Less Sugar.
Hi. Thank you. Joanna, I just love that you've thought this through for us.
Thank you.
Because I'm kind of an intuitive chef, just in my own home, not commercially. And I love being able to throw things together according to my taste buds. I've had to train myself to avoid baking and anything to do with that because it took a lot of time to figure out, and I wanted to reduce sugar and I wanted to modify recipes like I do in other cooking,
right.
And it was not a good use of my time.
Right.
So thank you, and I also agree with Gumby John about how these things that are over-sweetened don't ever really satisfy us, and that's what we're going for. We actually want the flavor of the fruit or the, you know, there's some sort of nutrition hidden in these foods that our body wants, and if it's not there or if it's being interfered with too much sugar, then that's what keeps people from, you know, stopping eating it, unlike Grumpy John, who disciplines himself to just stop, who knows.
After he was full, yes.
Yeah, so anyway, I just I think there is a line to be drawn about where sugar interferes with our ultimate satisfaction. And And thank you very much for even actually reducing it in your second book.
Thanks.
Right. Oh,
thanks,
thank
Jill,
you.
Appreciate that. So, Joanne, I'm curious to know about the progression then. If there were some recipes where you just knew that you needed the physical chemical properties of sugar, at least in some regards, so you didn't, for example, try certain cakes and things with maple syrup or honey.
Right, right. I think a good example is angel food cake. I wanted to create, I mean, people, some people understand that angel food cake is made with just egg whites and sugar and flour, and so it's a fat-free item, which makes it healthy in many people's books. And so to be able to do a lower sugar or a no sugar angel food cake would have hit a lot of people's, you know, sweet spot, so to speak. And that was not going to be possible. One of the things that angel food cake relies on is meringue. And the two ingredients in meringue happen to be egg whites and sugar. So trying to do an angel food cake without any sugar was just, it would be trying to make a hamburger without any hamburger meat. So what I did instead was I looked to other recipes that were angel food cake-like, and the next recipe is a chiffon cake. And a chiffon cake uses a little bit of fat, and that way I could reduce the sugar, add a little bit of fat, and still make a great, tasty sweet.
All right, I will ask more about fat when we come back. We have to take a break right now on the Jefferson Exchange. Joanne Chang is our guest. Her latest book is Baking with Less Sugar, Recipes for Desserts Using Natural Sweeteners and Little to No White Sugar. Got a couple of calls waiting. We'll take those when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange with Joanne Chang and you in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Joanne Chang, who is the co-owner and pastry chef at Flower Bakery and Cafe. There are four locations. They're all about 3,000 miles from here in the Boston area. But she writes cookbooks, which is great because her latest one is called Baking with Less Sugar, Recipes for Desserts Using Natural Sweeteners and Little to No White Sugar. And you can join our discussion on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 around the listening area. And our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So the example you just cited, Joanne, about angel food cake, not possible. You could do a chiffon cake where you can have a little fat substitute for the sugar. Is that often the trade-off? Because I'm curious to know if there are any particular fat savings in any of these recipes.
You know, that's such a good question. I think that sometimes, not all the time, definitely not all the time, but there were a couple of times, for instance, with the chiffon cake where you reduce the sugar so much. And what sugar does is it adds a lot of moisture to any baked good. So by the time you reduce the sugar so much that you've dried out the final product, you have to figure out a way to introduce that mouthfeel. So the chiffon cake is an example. Another example is the fudgy mascarpone brownie. I reduced the sugar from 2 cups to about 6 tablespoons, which is an incredible reduction. However, once we took the sugar out, it ended up being really dry. The flavor was there. We figured out how to make it taste like a fudgy brownie, but the texture was not. So the compromise was then to add some mascarpone cheese, which is a really rich, fatty cheese, and then that's when you get the mouthfeel.
It's the stuff used in tiramisu, so yes, it's very sweet.
Yeah, so there were some recipes that we did have to add a little bit more fat to, but not all of them. The oatmeal raisin cookie that I was talking about earlier, or the banana bread recipe, which uses only 6 tablespoons of sugar again, has still a great flavor and texture without also increasing the fat. So it kind of depended on the recipe.
All right, let's take another call. We have Brad in Ashland on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Joanne Chang.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Yes, I wanted to contribute. I'm not much of a cook, but I enjoy cranberry sauce, and I went to make my own batch. I got the berries from the store. I read on the back it called for 1 cup of sugar, and I thought, well, that's way too much. So I reduced it by half, and I made a batch, and it was okay, but it was still too sweet. So I made a second batch, and I used 1/4 cup of sugar, and it still lacked a little bit of the tartness that I was looking for. So I made a third batch. And all I put in was like raisins and dried mango, which
oh,
is
wow.
kind of sweet, sliced up real small.
Sure.
And I think the sugared ginger, a few
yes.
cubes of that kind of cut mm-hmm. up in little tiny pieces and mixed into it. And it came out really good. It was tart and just enough sweet to enjoy it. So I wanted to share that with you and your listeners and your guests.
Sounds delicious. And I think that's a great example of how sometimes some people get a little carried away with the amount of sugar they add to desserts, and then those recipes get spread, and that's what people use, and people's taste buds get used to that taste. But like you said, if you just reduce the sugar, you might find that you actually enjoy it more.
Interesting he brings up the cranberry sauce, too. I know it's not a baking thing, but I've experimented with that as well to try to reduce the sugar, but then you also end up with a thinner consistency in the cranberry sauce because it's not there to do the thickening, the syrupy nature of it.
Right, right. That's that textural trade-off that happens all the time.
You know, I wonder, too, since we touched on fats briefly, I know that part of the discussion when New York City talked about banning trans fats was that you can't get that lovely glaze on donuts and stuff, and I wonder where you come down in that argument.
Well, I don't agree that you can't get that lovely glaze. I think that the alternative to using trans fats is you can use other fats. They just happen to be more expensive. So, you know, the ban of trans fats for a lot of bakeries wasn't that big a deal because they'd already made the commitment to using butter, which is not has no trans fats. It's the processed fats, like the Crisco, where there happens to be, you know, some health issues in using them, but they also happen to be really inexpensive. So I don't agree that you can't have the same quality. You might have to pay a little bit more for it, both from the bakery level and maybe from the consumer level.
All right, another call here from Peter in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking baking with less sugar with Joanne Chang.
Good morning. I am curious if you would say that this is really a question about measuring.
Sure.
And I'm not necessarily talking about the first time you bake something.
Okay.
But after you've done it, the importance of perfect measurement.
All right, so in the process of getting to the making of the item?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I'm always a stickler for using weights when baking. I think that's the most precise way to bake. There was a caller earlier who said, you know, I'm not much of a baker. I prefer to cook because then I can just kind of improvise. I think there's definitely a fallacy out there that everything in baking is so specific and precise. There is a lot in baking that is specific and precise, but I've learned over the years that there's also a lot of in baking that can be a little bit more freeform. So if you go through a recipe once and you've measured it, and then the next time you feel a little bit more comfortable kind of adding your own spin to it, I would encourage you to do that, but just recognize that there are certain chemical reactions that do rely on things being measured specifically. But as I discovered in this book, the reaction between sugar and certain things isn't so strict that if you reduce the sugar by, let's say, half, you're going to have an entirely different product. So depending on your level of comfort and familiarity with baking, I think you can do a little bit of improvisation. But if you're a novice, then I would encourage you to stick to the recipe.
Is the science well established enough in your mind that you could look at a recipe in advance and think, you know, this is going to go badly if we take out this much sugar? That, I mean, could you get to that level of stuff, or did you have to make a lot of mistakes before you could get
the
recipes?
Well, there were definitely a lot of mistakes that we made. But I think it depends on the recipe. There were certain recipes I could just look at and say, no, that's not going to work. And then there's certain recipes that I'll look at and say, I'm fairly certain that this will work out pretty well. And I would say we got to about 80 or 90% by the end.
All right. You do help us set up the kitchen. There's a list of ingredients and devices you need and a section of tips. I'm intrigued by the how to calibrate your oven part.
Ah, yes. I am surprised and this goes from personal experience, at how a home oven can often be off by up to 50 degrees. My own home oven is off by 50 degrees, and so I use mine a fair amount. So I think a lot of people at home don't recognize that their ovens, even though it reads 350, it might not be at 350. And the important part of that is that if you have a cake batter or a cookie and you're putting it in the oven and you're expecting that the oven be at 350, but let's say instead it's at 300, what will happen is that the batter will melt before it actually starts to bake. And then your final product can end up dense and leaden or hard. which is obviously not what you want it to do. So, or on the flip side, you might put something on at 350, but your oven is actually at 400, in which case the outside of your cake is going to bake a lot faster than the inside, and then you might dry it out. So getting a really inexpensive oven thermometer, sticking it in your oven, and calibrating your oven is one of the best things you can do to improve your baking.
All right, into the recipes themselves, and I need to hear the story of your love for decapitated blueberry muffins.
So I love just eating the fruit part of the muffins, and I'm always taking the muffin tops that break on when we bake our muffins, and I'm kind of plucking out the fruit. And the staff actually know that for me. And so when I come, sometimes there will be a little container of all of the little muffin tops saved for me so that I can pluck all the fruit. But that was really helpful in writing this book, in knowing that the best part of the muffin is the fruity part. And so if you're trying to create a blueberry muffin with less sugar, just pack the muffin with tons of blueberries, and you don't need that much sugar, and you end up with a great muffin.
All right, so while we're on the fruits, let's talk about the banana bread that you experimented with and what you ended up with here.
So with the banana bread, we ended up reducing the sugar to 6 tablespoons. The original recipe has 18 tablespoons, so we got it down by a third. And what we did was we increased the amount of banana, and we took one of the bananas and we actually cooked it, either in the microwave or over the stove. And what cooking does is it changes the starches in the banana into sugars, and so that sweetens the banana bread. Because you have this additional banana, you need to change the structure of the batter, so we added an additional egg. All of those things together, we also increased the amount of vanilla, we increased the cinnamon, so all those things together, you bake it off, you create a banana bread that tastes entirely of bananas. It's not full of sugar, it's delicious, and it's just as addictive as the original recipe.
I'm curious about process then, because I'm starting to get this vision of you and a couple of other people standing around a whiteboard like the folks in House House MD trying to figure out the diagnosis. It's like, hey, wait, how about if we cook the banana
right.
first?
It's something like that, but without the whiteboard. We're just standing around and we're baking and we just think, what if we did this? And then somebody goes off and tries it. I mean, there is the lag time. Like, you can't just try something and immediately taste it. It takes a little bit of time. Something has to bake and then it has to chill and then cool and then we eat it. But yeah, you can just stand around. It's sort of like a science experiment and say, let's change this. There's in testing recipes for this book, we had many grids, you know, with the ingredients, with the different changes, because you have to track all of your changes. Because one of the things about testing recipes is that when you make it once, you realize that there's three different things that you want to do to change it. But if you change all three of those at once, then you don't know which of the three is the thing that actually improved it. It could be all three, or it could be just one of the three. So you have to be super patient and just change one thing at a time.
So a little science and a little algebra in the sense that you're just changing one variable at a time.
Exactly.
So was there any cooking with any artificial ingredients? I'm curious because I know that Splenda came out with that baking version a couple of years ago, if that got entered into this
discussion. No, I tend to avoid artificial ingredients, artificial sweeteners. You know, it's not something that I felt comfortable introducing into the baking of this book, especially in that this book is geared towards families. I mean, we felt that there would be a lot of people who like, and I've already heard from a number of people who have bought the book for them and their kids, and what they do is they bake together at home. So, you know, I don't think the artificial, I know that people use them a lot, especially when, you know, enjoying coffee or tea or whatever, but I think in baking, it's just not something that I have any familiarity with or, to be perfectly honest, any desire. I think that there's so many other ways that you can flavor a dessert without an artificial sweetener.
Were there some that were new to you, things that you hadn't considered before? I noticed you have molasses as one of the ingredients you used in here.
Yeah, molasses is something that, you know, I wanted to create a whole chapter on molasses, and I ended up combining it with the maple syrup chapter because molasses itself is a really strong flavor, and it's one that I fell in love with in experimenting with these recipes. But it wasn't one that I felt like was going to be able to support its whole chapter, a whole chapter. So we combined it with maple, which is a little bit more well-known and familiar to people. But there's definitely a depth of flavor. And again, if baking with less sugar is in part to increase the amount of flavor that you can get in desserts, then molasses is one of the great examples. It has such a rich, deep flavor that flavors so many great desserts, and it was really fun to cook with it in this book.
So let's talk about biggest surprises on both ends of the spectrum. So the biggest surprise bad, the greatest failure on the way to coming up with a workable recipe for a particular
item. Well, the greatest failure ended up not making it into the book because I couldn't figure it out. I wanted to do, I don't know if you've ever had lemon pudding cake. It's a cake that when you bake it, it separates and the cake floats to the top and there's like this pudding mixture that sinks to the bottom.
I think I have, yeah.
Yeah, they're delicious, and they're easy, and they're fun to put together, and I wanted to do one with maple syrup, and I must have tested it 30 times, and it's still kind of in my back pocket as something to do on a rainy day to keep testing it, because I was convinced that I would be able to figure out how to make a maple syrup version. So that was kind of a big failure that ended up not making it. I would say my biggest success is probably the recipe that's on the cover, the carrot pineapple cake. It's an entire carrot cake with cream cheese frosting that has no white sugar at all. It's sweetened entirely with apple juice concentrate. And we've been making this a lot for testings and tastings, and the response that people have is it's awesome to see them. They take a bite and their eyes light up, their jaws drop. They can't believe that there's no sugar. But you taste the carrots, you taste raisins, you taste pineapple, you taste walnuts. I mean, it's what you want carrot cake like.
My eyes light up just looking at the picture on the cover. It's amazing. Before we go, I wanted to ask about how much people are asking for gluten-free stuff in your bakeries these days.
Yeah, gluten-free is a big trend, and it's something that we also considered before writing this book. We get a lot of requests for it. We do a little bit of gluten-free baking, not a lot, but it's something that we've seen kind of, I feel like it's peaked already. I feel like it's kind of waning. I think as people learn more and more about it, we have more people who are eating gluten-free because they need to and fewer people who are eating it because they think they should, which I think is a good thing. We recognize that many people are celiac or have gluten sensitivities, and we want to respond to them. What's been challenging and frustrating is people who think it's a health fad and want to do it because they think it's healthy, but it really has nothing to do with health. It has to do with how your body processes gluten.
Yeah, a lot of medical authorities weighing in on that now, too. So
exactly.
Thanks for getting to that part of things. The book is called Baking with Less Sugar, Recipes for Desserts Using Natural Sweeteners and Little to No White Sugar. Joanne Chang is the author. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good to have you back. Take care.
Great. Thank you.